Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Melissa Odabash, MBE, founder and creative director of the eponymous luxury swimwear brand Melissa Odabash. Having been scouted aged 18 by a modelling agent while swimming in a neighbour's pool, Melissa's successful global modelling career brought her in her early 20s to live and work in Rome, modelling swimwear. Disillusioned with the poorly made bikini she was wearing, Melissa spotted a gap in the market for more timeless, comfortable and stylish products. And with the help of her family and some out-of-date sewing machines, she created her first pieces, demonstrating them in local boutiques, more of which you will hear about later. In 1999 in the UK, she launched Melissa Odabash with a small capsule collection of block colour bikinis before expanding into beachwear with designs inspired by her mother's 1970s crochet pieces. The brand is now sold in 75 countries and was described by Vogue, and I love this, as the Ferraris of the bikini world. And in 2023, Melissa received an MBE for services to the international swimwear industry and her continued philanthropic ventures, all of which we'll be talking about shortly. I've now got an iconic person in the room with me here. It's Melissa Odabash, and she is the person behind the brand called Melissa Odabash, which is convenient. Lucky you didn't call it something else, which you could have done.
I did in the beginning.
Did you?
And then I changed it after a few years.
Oh, is that right? And what was it called in the beginning?
It was called Bachata, which is a slow dance women do to seduce men in South America. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then I decided, forget it.
Forget it.
After 3 years, no one could say Bachata. So
no.
I just moved it to my name, which is even harder.
Well, I was going to say, it's like it's not a tongue twister, but you have to say it a few times and then you go, of course, Odabash.
Odabash.
Very easy. It's fabulous to have you here. We've sort of tracked you down, actually, because for a while, through various places, we're thinking she would be a fabulous person
to have on.
And here you are. Now, my wife has a couple of Melissa Odabashes, as it were. Not you, but obviously your work, and they're in the drawers. Did you envisage, sitting back then as a model, that you 20 years plus later would have people coming up to you, men and women, saying, yes, your work, thank you?
Well, more than men coming up saying, I recognize your name from my credit card bills, but...
there is that too.
Did I visualize it? I knew I wouldn't fail. I don't know, I just never thought for a second that I was doing something I shouldn't be doing.
But you were modeling. I mean, I guess that's
I was modeling, and then I started door-to-door. Like, I would make whatever money I made from modeling, I would buy the fabric, make a few samples, and then whatever models were backstage with me or wherever, whatever we were shooting at the time, I would sell them to the girls to get the word out there. And then they started coming back every year. You know, I was learning as I went along. I never knew anything about designing swimwear. I think you've either got it or you don't. I don't think it's something you can learn, like style. You know, you either know what, I don't know, I think also from being a model for the biggest brands, from Fendi to Valentino, I was constantly trying on clothes. So I knew what fit and what didn't. Mm. So I know the woman's body very well. I mean, I can look at anyone from a distance and tell them exactly what size they are and what style would suit them. But, you know, you learn as you go along. So,
but I guess the bit that's interesting is that, you think about models from the outside world and you say, well, they're models. And then you don't hear about many that then move into the world of business. And I guess that's the thing. So where was that? Did you know when you were modeling that you weren't always going to be a model?
I mean, I just did it to travel. I mean, I'm from New Jersey. I was like, Paris? I was scouted in my backyard to move to Paris first before Rome. And I remember the lady that was scouting models in New York, she happened to go out to New Jersey because my neighbor was a friend of hers from college. And I happened to be swimming in the pool. And she said, oh, who's that little girl out in the backyard swimming? She said, that's my neighbor. She said, call her in here. And I ran inside in a bikini, drenched, you know, soaking wet. And she said, would you like to go to Paris? And I was like, sure. Can I just go across the street to my parents and ask them if I can go to Paris?
How old were you at the time?
I was 19.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
And what was the life plan at 19 before that conversation?
I was going to school, uni in New York, fashion, kind of marketing, more marketing school and management in New York. Didn't like it, of course. I was partying the whole time. And then, then I packed my bags and I went to Paris.
And the family. So the family, you're a mix of many different countries.
Well, we're all born in America. Even
born in America,
but third generations. But I'm a mix. Yeah, Italian, maybe Turkish. I'm not sure. We're trying to figure out my second name. Dutch, English, a little mix.
And was there a sense of what Melissa ought to be doing according to the family at the age of 19? And was going to Paris okay with that?
Well, everyone worked for my family business. My father was a developer and
property developer.
Yeah. And both my sisters and my brother were working for, and they knew I was like so not focused, and they were all great in school and I wasn't. I was like, whatever. Do I really need to know what year this war was? Who cares? Like, that was how I was. So I was not very studious. I was street smart, though. And I think I was asked a few times already to model, but my parents would never let me. So I was asked by John Casablanca back in the day and all these other people. And they're like, no, they have other intentions. So they never would let me. But because it was a woman and she knew my neighbor, they let me go to Paris. And then I just partied.
She's lucky that you went to Paris and you parted, because if you hadn't done either of those two things, Melissa, you wouldn't have gone and created a brand and a business.
The funny thing is my parents would come over to visit me and I didn't want them, like I had gained, like, I don't know, I could care less. I was eating croissants and having the best time and I didn't want them to know that I wasn't doing something. So I would speak fake French and they thought I was speaking French. And I was like, look, at least I'm learning the language here. I'd make fake phone calls in front of them. I was not speaking one word of French, but I had the accent. So they're like, oh, you know, my mother would say to my father, at least she's learning French.
It's brilliant. It's all the beginnings of what makes a great entrepreneur. It's just knowing what to say and when to say it. Stay with me for much more from my business shaper. It's Melissa Odabash, and she is behind the brand called Melissa Odabash, and they make gorgeous bikinis and the like, and a lot more as well. There's a story that, you know, you went around at the beginning in Italy and you basically doorstep people and said, these are really nice bikinis. What do you think? You didn't say you designed them.
No.
And that's true.
Yeah.
And how long did you do that for before things became more formal?
Like 2 years, I started going around to the best boutiques and just saying, oh, I'm a model. They sent me here to try these on for you, because I knew if you try them on, then they'll buy them. And I didn't
say... Why though? Why
is that
true?
Well, because the samples are all made on my body, so I knew they fit. So,
that's brilliant. So you just went, these are going to look great.
They're going to look great. They fit me. I mean, they were made on me. And then they started buying them. And then about 2 years later, I moved to London. And this girl that I had met was American, living in Rome, working for Procter & Gamble. And she's lost her job and said, I'm moving back to America. Can I take your sample line? And she got me, within 2 months, got my swimsuits in the Sports Illustrated, you know, once a year magazine. And my first shoot was on Naomi, Tyra Banks, Karen Mugler, who used to be a super famous model back in the day. Like, I had like six supermodels, Heidi Klum, and that was my opening spread I got. And then once I got into that, then I would call a department store, like Saks Fifth Avenue, equivalent to Harrods.
And just keep going.
And say, do you want the credit in this magazine? I'll give you the credit where they can buy it if you put my clothes in your store.
Just going back to the bit where you were going there and you were selling, essentially, or... Was there an immediate buzz from converting the opportunity into a sale? Do you remember that feeling?
No, I don't remember a buzz because they were the worst payers, but I don't remember that buzz really hitting. I liked it when I would go to a beach and see people walk past me in my swimsuit. That gave me much more of a buzz.
But was it hard work then, actually turning up and putting on your own stuff?
Okay, this is Italy, where you couldn't drive your car on certain days depending on the last digit of your license plate because of the pollution. So it was a nightmare. There was nothing easy about starting my business in another country in a foreign language.
And what kept you on that road, Melissa, at that point? Because there's a lot of tenacity in there. Where did that grit come from?
Probably from my father. He was always like businessman. Always like, you have to make it on your own. You know, don't depend on anyone. I don't know. I just always have been that way. I'm also quite proud. I don't want to fail. You have to show your parents that, you know, you can do it too.
And was there a thing also, because you talked about your siblings, that they went to uni and they were academic, was there a bit of like, I'll show you?
Not to my siblings. They could, I mean, they've always been super supportive, but more to like my parents, like, okay, I'm never going to ask you for a penny, I'll do it on my own type of situation. They were supportive though. I mean, super supportive. Once I got in the magazines, then my father said, oh, she's carrying on my name. Then he was super supportive.
Ah, the Odabash family.
Yeah, the Odabash name.
Now it's getting the
respect.
Then
he was bringing it on the golf course, showing his friends that his name was being on supermodels.
And then in terms of your friend from Procter & Gamble and the professional...
She's still working for me today.
Is she?
Yeah.
Okay.
I still have all the same employees I started with. Same factories in Italy. Yeah. And that, like, family.
And that learning curve in those first few years you came to London, what if you can go back that far,
yeah,
what were the things that you took away and went, geez, these are new things I'm having to learn?
Oh, every day. I'm still learning. Like, I don't believe, I think when people think they know everything, they don't. Like, you still have to learn as you go along. I don't know. Every day there's new issues, you know, just when you get over COVID and 65 countries shut down at the same time and you can't ship to any of them. You finally start to recuperate and then Brexit happens. And then that's like, you know, I have to set up companies in other countries because of duties and taxes. And someone's not going to buy a swimsuit if they live in Ireland from my website anymore because the taxes will be £75 and duties. So I had to open a European website, you know, just so that Ireland can buy on a European website. Like, it's just, it's a constant. It's a constant. But I love what I do. So I keep going.
Stay with me for much more because Melissa Radabash is going to keep going here on Just Shapers as well. She's coming back in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Mishcon Academy digital sessions. They can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Mishcon Derez's Emily Knight talks to Charlotte Young, a fund manager at Troy Asset Management, about why women historically invest less than men and what's being done to change it.
The Mishcon Academy digital sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
So we know that diverse investment teams are scientifically shown to result in better fund performance. Why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, it's a great question because that's what the data does show. And there's lots of data to back it up. I think it's intuitive. And I think Matthew Syed's books are great on this. I really recommend Rebel Ideas if you haven't read it, about why you need not only diverse people around the table, but you need to invite all of those perspectives to come to the fore. Don't just have one person autocratically stating what the conclusion is. Make sure that you, particularly with women who, again, sometimes there's a stereotype which can hold true, which they just hold back a little bit until they've got all the information and they don't necessarily speak as stridently. So make sure all voices are heard. But it makes sense. If you're trying to make good decisions, you need good challenge and you need different perspectives. And gender is one of the most obvious ways to get that diversity of thought. There are loads of other forms of diversity. As GAIN, we're really conscious of socioeconomic as well as ethnic diversity. And for that reason, the cohort of women that we have coming up through our programs is really diverse on those two counts as well. But gender's such an obvious and very easily quantifiable one. We're over half the population. Why are we only 10% of the people who are making some of, in my opinion, the most important decisions in society, in our economy? I.e. where money goes. You and I are going to be investing our savings. We want the people who are deciding where that goes to also be diverse and ultimately make better decisions because that is that breadth of thought around the table where the decision's being made.
The Mishcon Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit mishcon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishcon Derez. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today is Melissa Odabash, MBE. I like saying that, MBE. We'll say it again. Founder and creative director of the eponymous swimwear brand, Melissa Odabash. You were talking before about you still love doing what you're doing and you learn every day.
Yeah.
You obviously still have the time to focus on what next season looks like.
Well, I work a year in advance.
Yeah.
So I'm on. Right. And it's funny because people, men, they always say to me, so when are you going to sell? It's the first question they say to me.
As in sell the business?
Always. What's your forecast? When are you going to sell?
I haven't asked you yet. That's terrible.
Well, I know, but I know it's going to come. Like, and I was like, what would I do? Like, right now, it's so in my DNA. That's all I know how to do is, you know, and
what,
I love
what
it.
What do you do? And on that, though, the creative side of it, obviously it started with, I've tried on the best brands in the world. I've been wearing them. I've been a clothes horse for all these brands. I'm going to do my own thing. Do you still love what's the little take going to be? What's the twist going to be? What's the texture going to be? Is that the thing that still makes you, is that when you're at your most fulfilled?
Well, yeah. I mean, I love, the creative part is like probably 15% of a brand is the creative side. The rest is problem solving, employees, shipping, marketing, it's all the rest. The creative side is the best part about the brand. Also, like, you know, it goes on paper first. So when you do finally see the finished product, and then you go off to do the shoots and you see it live on a model, that's when you're like, oh, tap myself on the back, you know, give myself a little tap on the back.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult, because you might have great ideas, but you can't develop them. Just so hard to develop, especially today. Everything's so difficult, and I don't know. So when something does come out exactly how you want it visually, then you're like, okay, I'm doing a good job.
And you've moved into loungewear now.
Right.
And I went and I have a look, you see, and obviously as a bloke, I mean, what do I know? But I've got an aesthetic.
Exactly.
I see this and it's beautiful. And I looked at the blues and the greens this season. I thought that's pretty, I mean, those are nice colours.
Well, I believe in, like, I think a lot of people go wrong when they create brands because they think they can do everything. So it's very hard to stick to your core of what you know. And then after years and years of learning it, knowing all the problems, then you can slowly launch into other items, but it still has to stick with the brand. And for me, I travel around the world nonstop. So loungewear was such an easy add-on, or after the beach, you're cold, or you're sunburnt, or you just want to take off your swimsuit. And so my loungewear is all still for the beach. Like, it's still a resort wear product.
And also, obviously, I think the world's kind of become more casual, especially since lockdown. People are much happier in those lovely soft materials because they don't need to dress up in the same way that they did. And again, on the materials, do you just look wherever you need to look in terms of, you know, fabrics? I remember speaking years ago to Nicole Fahey, and we were talking about India. At the time, India was a bit of a new frontier. It was French Connection then. Mm-hmm. Is that joy of finding the fabric that you want still part of what drives you?
And it's so because of, you know, sustainability now. Like, I go to Paris, I buy most of my fabrics in Paris or Italy, and they're getting so advanced with sustainable fabrics and everything. Still not quite there for swimwear because it has to be tested for water, chlorine, all sun. But they are really coming out the other side. And I believe that within 5 years, we will have 100% sustainable fabrics for garment business. So it's good. Amazing innovation coming through now.
And again, that sounds like it fascinates you.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything that doesn't in a way? Because it sounds, I look at you and I look at your eyes kind of literally shining as you talk about your business and all the different facets. Is there anything that is boring in the things that you'd like to avoid doing, truthfully?
Is there anything boring? I mean, my business is not boring, but of course there's certain things that is a bit boring, like, you know, the deliveries, the FedEx. So.
But it's got to work, right?
Yeah, they all have to work. I love actually every aspect of, and I don't think I would appreciate where I am today if I didn't struggle all those years to get where I am today. Mm. So I think it's good to know every aspect of your business. So in case something fails, you don't have to rely on people. I'm not someone that delegates because I'm quite hands-on person and I know I can get it done just as quick. So in the beginning, when you're building a business, it's very hard to delegate because you're so used to being a one-man show and just doing the whole thing yourself. So I'm always prepared. If anything happens, I can solve the problem immediately. Whether it's the FedEx box went to Pakistan instead of New York, or went to, I don't know, Dubai instead, I'm like, it's okay, we'll fix it. I keep the whole office calm, like, there's no problem we can't solve.
I like the sound of you. It's Melissa Rodabash. She's my problem-solving business shaper today here on Jazz Shapers. You talked earlier about, you know, you can't teach style. And I think that's right. And I've had a few different sorts of guests around different and advertising and other creative industries. And they say pretty much the same thing. Of course, you can be a great technician and you can make something, but actually envisaging, I'm looking here at a Prada bag, by the way. It's a lovely bag, but this is the world of luxury, Melissa. Was it always going to be a luxury brand for you? Was it ever going to be mainstream? And I don't mean that to be disparaging about mainstream. They're just different audiences. Why luxury?
Well, first of all, I use luxury fabrics, like high quality. And for me, that's like my swimwear you can still wear in 20 years. They do not fall apart. So that for me is luxury. And that for me is, I view sustainability completely different than other people. Because for me, sustainability is something that lasts for a long, long time.
So you don't have to,
very long time.
And you don't replace it.
And then you can pass it down to your kids if it doesn't fit you anywhere. And I get that all the time. I get so many people on Instagram sending me pictures of their kids in a swimsuit I made 15 years ago. So for me, that sustainability is good quality, things that will last, and you never have to throw them away. I never started this thinking it was going to be more than a year. I just started because I knew I needed something other for my brain and the way I work, other than modeling. So when I started, it wasn't about And I don't believe it should ever be about start a brand because you want to make money. It's just something, it's a passion, and that's why I do it. It was never about money, and it was never about this is going to be luxury, because back in the day, there was 10 luxury brands, you know, Armani, Valentino, never. I don't even think swimwear was considered like in the fashion world. It was something like Speedo you bought once a year and you went in
but
the
no,
summer.
You're, and you're credited with creating the category of luxury swimwear.
No one. I mean, yes, they added on. And then slowly, the big brands would add two pieces in the end of their fashion show, but it was never considered a separate section of actually fashion. Mm. So I had to pave the way and actually show people that this is an all-year-round product. And I remember being American living in London, and the way foreigners view London, they're like, why would you sell swimwear in the rainiest country in the world? And I was like, yeah, the weather's so bad that they travel so much to get out of it that that's why I did it in London.
And that was 25 years ago. I mean, this is your 25th anniversary.
Yes.
As you look back now again, and you mentioned your dad briefly, and I know he passed away,
yes.
He was very young, and your mum, and what I mentioned in the introduction around the crochets and all mm-hmm. that. Apart from them, or you know, who's influenced this journey that you've been on now?
Probably I'll give you 100% credit to my mother, because she has always been like super artistic. She can draw. She used to make stained glass windows. She can sew, impeccable style. And she raised 5 kids. Like, she was a housewife. She didn't really work, except for, you know, we're all a year and a half difference between us. So that's a lot, a full house of kids. But she used to, you know, I was the only one interested in fashion, and she used to get Women's Wear Daily, which was the fashion magazine in New York. And somehow she got it sent to New Jersey, and we would go through the whole magazine. She would wake me up and watch Elsa Clinch's CNN, watching the European fashion shows. And I would sit there fascinated by it, just like, Karl Lagerfeld made that skirt 2 inches too long. He should have made it shorter. Would have looked better with the jacket. I was 9 years old, and I think I just... watching my mother this whole time and her style, and she looked good even at breakfast. I mean, none of us inherited what she was like, but she just was super glam, and I think that's what inspired me.
Stay with me for my final chat with my guest. That's Melissa Odabash, and we've got some Buddy Guy and Junior Wells for you too. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Melissa Odabash is my famous business shaper. You've got all sorts of names today I've given you. Hopefully you're all very positive, though. All nice
all
ones.
Positivity.
All positive. Another thing that you touched on and I've read about you is that a lot of what you do does good things as well. There's money going to various charities around the world, and you've received this MBE, not just because you're in the fashion world and doing brilliant things, but because of your philanthropic work as well. Why has that been important to you, Melissa? Why do you think you've pursued that? Where's that from, that desire to do?
My father was extremely charitable man. Like, he grew up with nothing and was self-made. So even as kids, he would take us to, we'd have to all take one of our Christmas presents and go to orphanages and give away our presents. We, you know, it was something like the homeless. We always bought food to them, and he made us physically do all of it. Like, we always were the first family online serving soup kitchens or anything. So it was, you know, as a young kid, we always gave back. We have our own Odabash charity. So I now make a mastectomy swimmer line for breast cancer. And, you know, I think if you're in the public eye, you're only as good as what you give back. Because for me, that gives me so much more than designing. It's giving back and seeing people, you know, happy. You know, it's already intimidating going to the beach, even when you don't have breast cancer. Imagine on top of it, you know, women are so complex. We have so many, you know, we're so self-conscious about everything. So when they approached me, could I do something? I said, I'll design a swimwear collection.
And also, you've talked publicly about ageism. I mean, I see there are issues which you alight on and you say, well, this is important. That voice, I know that's not just about the business. Again, where does that come from, that thing of standing up and saying, excuse me?
Yeah, well, I get interviewed all the time, and they're always asking, at what age should women stop wearing a bikini? So I purposely posted everyone from J-Lo. I mean, Christie Brinkley just turned 70, and she looks insane in a bikini. And I think times are changed. You know, I don't think there's an age for what's appropriate or not appropriate. And I'm always saying, like, you know, it's about confidence. It's about feeling good, especially with the world today. Like, if you feel good, go for it. Just, it's not about how you look. It's about your, you know, how you feel.
I have to ask something really superficial now as well. The Beyoncé thing, the Elle Macpherson thing, the Gwynny, and I've never met Gwynny, obviously, Gwyneth Paltrow. Is it kind of cool that these very, very, I mean, ridiculously famous people, women, are wearing your brand? What
Actually,
is that?
Actually, I was with Elle yesterday.
Of course you were. I mean, of course, yeah, me too.
Yeah,
except I'm the Elle.
And Naomi. it's like, you know, over the years, like it always hits you like the first time you see them in a magazine, and then all of a sudden they're asking if they can come to your showroom to pick up some things. And it was always a thrill. And I'm still friends with all of them, from Cindy Crawford, like 20 years, 25 years. They supported me from day one, and they still wear my stuff 25 years later. So it's a huge honor, because celebrities can choose from any designer. Mm. And then, of course, Beyoncé. But my biggest... And I've worked with every celeb, but my biggest celeb that gave me the biggest thrill was I got an email one day from Barbara Streisand.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, I can retire. I'm done. I've done it all. I thought, you know, Beyoncé was cool, but Barbara Streisand. So I go running into my office to my team, and I'm like, guys, Barbara Streisand wants me to design da-da-da-da. And they're like, who?
No.
And I was like, Barbara Streisand.
No, that's terrible. That's the moment
you know. Well, they're under 30s.
Of course.
And I'm like, Barbara Streisand? And I'm like, I'm the worst singer, but I'm trying to sing songs, and they're looking at me. And then I was like, the movie, Meet the Fuckers? Like, oh, that movie, yes, we've seen that. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I still remember
Star
Is
Born. And she invites me for like 10 years now. She invites me to a concert. She sends me beautiful things every Christmas. She writes me beautiful letters. So for me, I've checked the box. MBE what? From the Queen and Barbara Streisand. I don't know. Like,
and
that
you're
was,
not and you're not selling.
And I'm not selling. And those were the two biggest. I'd say they were my biggest highlights.
Barbara Streisand and the Queen. I don't think I can top that.
Yeah.
It's been really great talking to you.
Thank you.
Carry on doing what you do. You're
thank
not selling.
You, thank you.
News
no,
again here.
I'll be
here.
Back next year if I haven't sold.
Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Marvin Gaye, Mercy, Mercy Me. It just is such a happy song. It reminds me of dancing in my Paris days or whatever. It's just a happy song. You always see people when this song comes on, get up and dance or sing along to it.
Marvin Gaye with Mercy, Mercy Me. The song choice of my business shaper today, Melissa Odebash. She talked about liking to know absolutely everything that goes on in the business so that she's got a really good handle on it. She talked about always being prepared and the love of solving problems. And over the years, of course, 25 years in, there have been lots of problems which she has managed to solve. And I love this thought. If you're in the public eye, you're only as good as what you give back. I think that's a really good mantra to have. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkonda Raya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoyed that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.